Hey, it's Lori from Hike. I am bringing you Liesl and Dave today. You've met Liesl before if you're a listener of the show. She was on last season, and we had two great episodes, one for On the Trail and one regular weekly episode where she chatted about her hikes of the PCT, the AT, and how she got into backpacking. Well, today we get to meet her husband, Dave, her hiking partner, and learn about just life hiking together. We have a great conversation about hiking in the Blue Ridge area and their approach to being through hikers. You're going to enjoy this conversation. And if you want to take a listen to Liesl's previous episodes, I'm going to put those in the show notes for you. So take a listen to my conversation with Liesl and Dave. So I'm here with Liesl and Dave. Welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
And for listeners, you might remember that Liesl and I, we chatted last year sometime. Time is a mystery to me right now. So don't exactly know when, but we did have a good chat. And I will also put a link to that interview. And actually we had two episodes, one of our Sunday episodes. So I'll put both of those in the show notes so people can go back and listen if they haven't already. So, all right. So let's just start out. Maybe where are you guys at today?
We live on Daniel Island. It's a part of Charleston, South Carolina. So this has been our on and off home for almost 3 years now.
Yeah.
So my whole family lives here, and we grew up vacationing at Seabrook Island. So my whole family eventually moved to I was from Tennessee, but we moved to the Charleston area because that's where we used to vacation. And then, so yeah, it's been our home base. So you're
on an island.
Kind of.
We're fast and loose with the word island. It's more of kind of like that's right, we live on an island, more so than like a real island. Like,
okay.
So if you look at Google, there's two big rivers. Like, Charleston's just a collection of rivers. And then there's a tiny creek that makes Daniel Island an island.
It's more of a peninsula, if we're being real honest, but there is a waterway that makes it an island. But
I'm from Michigan. And this is, you know, we know about peninsulas here in Michigan.
Yeah, you have the big one.
Yeah.
There's a lot of islands here in in Charleston area.
Oh, yeah. So I've only visited Charleston once. I remember it just being really beautiful, like walking around and everything by the water and stuff. So yeah. So I'm envisioning a very nice, easygoing day for you, like outside. Yeah,
we even went on a walk on the beach this morning. So
it's
in the fall, okay. So it's a chilly day here, but we did do that.
Yeah. Chilly is relative.
Our life is super glamorous. So
but again, we have an inflatable couch that has a hole in it at the moment. Yeah.
Well, you know, you are through hikers. So
we have to do.
All right. So, you know, Dave, since I haven't spoken to you before, can you tell me first a little bit about like your background? You know, you said obviously you vacationed, you know, here and things like that, and kind of grew up, you said you grew up in Tennessee. So tell me a little bit about your outdoors background.
Sure. It kind of got ratcheted up or started. My grandparents moved out to Colorado in the Denver area when I was like in sixth grade, I think. And so it started out, we would go out there and go skiing around Christmas time. That was just like a family tradition, which was a lot of fun. And that kind of exposed me to the West. My family is like active, but not really outdoorsy. Like I had never really done an overnight backpacking trip until I was in college. And that was just because like, I thought it sounded cool. So I went and did it one day, kind of a thing. But my grandparents moved out to Colorado, and I got addicted to hiking 14ers. I have kind of an obsessive personality. Like if I do something, I do it a lot. So I was like, oh, I hiked a 14er. That's cool. There's 58 of them. Maybe I'll try to hike all of them. And so that was an obsession for a long time. And then that kind of transitioned as Liesl and I's relationship started to integrating her into hiking 14ers. And then after that, we were like, we got married and we're like, well, you know, maybe like to have kids someday. So it'd be really cool to go on like a longer hike before we did that. And so I heard about the John Muir Trail from a magazine when I was in college, and I saw a picture of Ray Lakes and I was like, oh, that'd be super cool. So we went and hiked the John Muir Trail and it was really cool. And then we were like, well, maybe like before we have a baby, we should like hike a longer trail. And so then we hiked the Appalachian Trail, and then we were like, well, we hiked the AT. That was really cool. Maybe before we have a baby, we hike the PCT.
I see there's a trend here.
Yeah. So this like hypothetical child has been motivating me to keep hiking.
We don't have kids.
Yeah. And so anyway, so we've hiked a number of trails, and yeah,
we have through hikes instead of children.
Yeah. So, I mean, and it's something that's
kind of like kids. Your hikes.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
But so you were, I know last year you were looking to do the CDT, the Continental Divide Trail, and I think those plans got shifted a bit, obviously, with COVID. So is that still on the radar?
Yeah. I mean, that's like the dream. So it's kind of, you know, juggling balls of what regulations are, and we want to be within what's, you know, the appropriate thing to do. So we're hoping to get to hike the Arizona Trail in March, and then depending on what the CDT looks like with New Mexico regulations, we'll either hopefully start in New Mexico, or we might just try to piece together as much of as we can get done, but we don't really know for sure. So just kind of being really flexible. It's just something you just kind of have to do if you want to do stuff like this.
Yeah, exactly. So March is, I mean, we're recording this February 1st. So I can't believe it's already February, but so not that far away.
Yeah, looking at 6 weeks from tomorrow, we would fly to Tucson. And that's a normal time to do an Arizona trail hike because you want to be in the desert before it's too hot, but also before, or I guess like before it's too hot, but also not close enough to February when it's still really cold and there's a lot of snow. So that's kind of the sweet spot. Of course, it could be chillier, but it could also be warmer. So we'll see.
So it sounds like, so Arizona Trail is your warm up maybe to the CDT?
Either that or just, and that's one of the things we've talked about recently, is it was going to feel like the warm up, like, you know, get 800 miles in and be ready to go on the CDT. But we also want to be realistic with ourselves. We want to follow state and local regulations as best we can, or just follow them as we are able to. And if that means that we can't go into New Mexico right now in a way that would be respecting their local and state regulations, we don't want to do that. So we're just kind of keeping an eye on things. If we need to piece together, like Dave said, the CDT and then not full northbound or southbound, but we might flip-flop or do something different, we could potentially try to piece it together that way. But again, 2021, we're just holding everything loosely and seeing what happens.
So in Charleston area, then, you know, what's your, you talked about walking on the beach. Mm-hmm. So, you know, starting out the day, but what's your outdoor kind of hiking life like? Are there certain trails or areas right around that, you know, Charleston that you're hiking in, or are you doing a couple hours away here or there to get to certain mountains or whatnot?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, where we live on Daniel Island, there's a great network of trails that go in and around the island. We've got like 20 or 30 miles just here, like outside our door. We live across the street from a huge pond that has like all sorts of birds and wildlife and stuff. So, I mean, honestly, like most of the time we just enjoy being here. It's one of the reasons we live on the island is because it's so nice. But we've done a few things like this past year with COVID. I told you I like plants. Like the Southeast is like the belt for carnivorous plants. So one thing that we went and did for coronavirus was go and march around these bogs in kind of the middle of nowhere, like Alabama and Mississippi and North Carolina, and like finding Venus flytraps and different like Sarracenia pitcher plants. That was like our like COVID adventure that we didn't plan on doing, but was like, oh, this is really rad that this is all right here. And like, you're like driving out in the middle, like literally no one is out there but mosquitoes. And so you're like, well, if you got to be away from people, this is a cool thing to get to do. And, but most of the things that we've done, like we'll drive up to Asheville area or go to the national park, or, I mean, we've hiked kind of all along like the the Blue Ridge Parkway type area. I mean, that's like, if we want to do something like that, I would say is legitimate or whatever, like that would be where we'd go. It's about a 3 to 4 hour drive to get to Greenville or Asheville from here. And we usually have 4 day weekends. So that's like pretty easy to do once a month, just to shoot up to go do something. So.
Oh, that sounds nice. I'm jealous right now. Well, because of COVID, I was working in Atlanta. And so that was, again, the opportunity, 3-4 hours, get up to North Carolina, North Georgia, up, you know, into even Tennessee. And of course, you know, I haven't been down there for quite some time now. So I miss it. I miss being able to hike in the mountains. So
are you just working from home still right now?
Mm-hmm.
Nice. For the foreseeable future.
Yeah, for a long, long time.
Yeah.
I also want to wear pants.
I bet. Yes.
So, you know, you said that it's only a few hours away, you know, to kind of get into some of those spots. So I know I had wanted to ask you, like, tell me, like, maybe both of you, like, what are your, like, top hikes in that area? And maybe I'd like to hear kind of your favorites from either of you.
Do you know yours off the top of your head?
I mean, I think the thing that was the most surprising to me, I mean, obviously like the AT and the Smokies is awesome. But we hiked the Foothills Trail, I guess maybe last year. I don't remember.
It's like 2 years ago.
Yeah. It's like 70-ish, 80 miles. And it goes from Oconee State Park, I think, to Table Rock. And
it's in northern South Carolina.
Yeah. Like, so
just the top edge.
It skirts the border of Georgia, South Carolina, and North Carolina. And the trail was really beautiful, but also the trail was just really nice. Like some of the trails around like the Blue Ridge area are pretty body beating. And like I have like a knee that is just, you know, it's been on a lot of thru hikes. And so I was really just pleased with like how nice the trail was, the Foothills Trail. There are lots of cool suspension bridges and like creek crossings and like, Oconee State Park is the Oconee flowers are there, and we hiked it in the spring when they were blooming, and they're like a thing that's only in that area, so that was really cool to see. But I was really kind of blown away by the Foothills Trail. We did it just as like we'll go do this in a weekend thing, and it was actually really great. I'd recommend that to anybody.
That sounds nice. I have heard a couple people who have done it, and I've not heard about like how nice the trail is. And you know, a lot of times people don't really talk about that, like the trail itself, you know, that is it well taken care of, you know, because there's all the people behind the scenes who are, you know, taking care of it, maintaining it, making sure that it's there for us to hike on. And you mentioned that there's a lot of bridges. So I know that takes some work.
And they're not like, you know, little like, foot bridges. They're like
cool, like little crazy suspension bridges. Yeah, it's wild. So I was kind of like, oh, let's take my picture with this bridge. This is amazing.
So they've done a fantastic job maintaining that trail. Yeah. Like, I think it's probably like the Foothills Trail Conservancy or something, but they do a fantastic job, and they send you an award when you're done. So you can register for the Peregrine Award.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah.
And so would you recommend hiking it one way or another?
I don't know that it really matters. You're hiking from state park to
if
state
you start
park.
At Table Rock, you have to go like way up right away. Oconee, you're like hiking pretty flat along the, I don't remember if it's the Chattooga River or whatever the river is that divides Georgia and South Carolina. So we did it that way, which if you wanted to like get your heart rate up, then do Table Rock. But it's kind of nice to go down the giant hill at the end of
and
your
then
hike.
I guess too, you go over Sassafras Mountain, which is the high point in South Carolina. And that would be at the end if you go the way we did it, which is which way?
We started in Oconee and went to Table Rock, which I
just
think
got out of the car.
It's kind of, well, it's not necessarily north to south. It's kind of more like
northeast,
maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But
okay. Yeah. So
I'm not great with landmarks.
Do you have a shuttle?
We
or someone picked you up?
Yeah. So they have on the Conservancy's website or whatever, they had a list of people that you could call for shuttle services. And so we just arranged something with one of the people on their list. It was pretty smooth. It was
dropped
nice.
Our car at the end point and then had the shuttle driver drive us to the other side and started from there.
And so how long did it take you? It was 70-ish miles?
Mm-hmm. I think we did it in 3 nights.
In like 3 days. Yeah, 3-4 days. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah.
Okay. So nice for someone who can't get maybe a lot of time off work, that, you know, has the hiking bug and needs to
absolutely. I think it's great for that. Because I think too, you could do it, you know, you wouldn't have to do 20-ish miles a day if you had, a week. Like, you could take a week or, like, a regular vacation time and really enjoy yourself and probably do closer to 10 miles a day, or 10, 12, 15 miles a day. Have a night.
Are there a lot of, is it shelter-based, like shelters kind of spaced apart, or were you just, you know, finding places to camp?
Yeah, I don't remember there being... Okay. On the trail
there were
just kind
like,
of like obvious
lean-tos and
yeah there were other like little places and, to camp
yeah and the map that we use is the same. There's one that we have for the Art Lib trail as well. It's by
Pocket Guides.
It's called Pocket Profile, but it's by Anti-Gravity Gear, and it's just like a little one piece map that has like a breakdown of like all the water sources and camping. It's a lot like AWOL for the AT, but it's a one piece of paper map,
and it's water resistant.
Yeah, and water and tear proof. And so yeah, so we have one of these for the Art Lib Trail, for the Benton McKay Trail, and then for the Foothills Trail. So like, I don't think that Guthook or anybody like has app based stuff. There's probably app based stuff for this, but having the little map is what we did, and it was pretty nice.
Great.
So,
and I think it cost $5.
Yeah, they're super cheap, and they sell them at like the little visitor centers or whatever, so you can show up and buy it when you get there.
Oh yeah, that's easy. That's nice. So Foothills Trail is one of the favorites. What, Lisa? Do you have one?
I mean, a couple of places along the AT that are in their area, in that area, are Max Patch and then Big Bald. Is that it, right? The one further.
Big Bald.
Those two are really easily accessible from the Asheville area and from the Blue Ridge. And they are also along the Appalachian Trail corridor. And they have beautiful like sunrise, sunset views and 360 views of the mountains. And I think that they're two of like the most primo spots in that area. And other people think so too, because they're always heavily populated, or at least Max Patch. You can drive and like walk up the last tiny bit of Max Patch, and it's kind of a circus, but it's beautiful. So understandably so.
Yeah. So I have not been to Max Patch. It's kind of one of those that, oh, why didn't I just go another 50 miles and just go there? kind of places. But yeah, I've heard a lot about it. Obviously I've heard about the overpopulation or, you know, over-loving, I guess, whatever you might call it. But I imagine it's one of those that you go half a mile either way.
Yes.
And no one else is around.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You're exactly right.
Yeah.
That, and I also think, I'm trying to think of things off of the AT as well that aren't quite so busy. I guess it's still just as busy, but in the Shining Rock Wilderness, which is part of the Art Lobe, you go over several balds in a stretch of trail, and that area is really beautiful too. And it's called Shining Rock because of the quartz. It is quartz, right? Is it quartz rock? So quartz rock that I guess if you hit them together, they light up in the dark. So it makes it shining rock. So whatever compound causes them to do that, but it's really beautiful because there's all the quartz rock up on top of the mountains, and then you have like the bald like overarching views as well. So that's, I think, would probably be the highlight of the Art Lobe for me as well. But we had also hiked those mountains before, because when we lived in Asheville, we hiked the South Beyond 6,000, which is all of the peaks over 6,000 feet in the southeastern portion of the United States.
So you did those together?
We did. That was pre-long trails.
Yeah, so that was, we hiked a bunch of 14ers, and then we had done the John Muir Trail, and then we were living in the Asheville area, and we found out that there were 6,000 foot peaks, and there's 40 of them. And like I said, like, oh, there's a list of something I could do. Oh, that's cool. Let's go do that. And so we lived in Asheville for like a year and a half. So we just progressively were ticking those off, which I had hiked Cold Mountain with my dad, like when I was in college, because I read Charles Frazier's Cold Mountain, and I was like, oh, cool. Let's go to Cold Mountain, you know, like you do with stuff like that. But so we started hiking those, and that was actually what triggered us to want to hike one of the things to push us towards the AT is, in order to get to a cluster of the 6,000 foot peaks, you're right around Tri-Corner Knob Shelter, which is one of the main shelters in the park, in the Smokies. And we were there in May, like towards the end of May, and I didn't think about it at the time, but there was like, we had permits to be at the shelter, and then every other thru-hiker in the bubble was there too. And so I was like,
perfect timing.
Yeah. So we were like, you know, like,
we embraced it.
Oh yeah. Well, my personality is mostly solitary. So me being put in a group of like you know, in a shelter for 12 with 30 people at it. I was kind of like, oh, this is not what I was anticipating. But it was inspiring to like meet and talk to people. And I mean, you know, you meet them, you get like an eclectic mix of cool people, weird people, you know, all sorts of stuff. But it was kind of like, oh, wow, these people are doing that. Like, that's like so wild. Like, it'd be so cool to do that sometime. But we were, you know, it's fun when you see somebody else that's doing something inspiring, but at the same time, you're doing something that you're passionate about too. And it's like, oh, you guys are going on the AT. We're going to take this other trail and go over towards like Big Laurel or whatever. That was the mountain we were hiking that day. And so, yeah, I mean, it's like I said, it's been a progressionary thing, but there's been a lot of kind of overlaps and stuff like that to lead us to where we're at.
So those, the South is right. The South Beyond 6,000 Challenge. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. So I've heard that there are also a couple of those that you have to basically bushwhack through that they're not like a clear trail. Is that true?
That is 100% accurate. Okay. I had like the biggest bruise of my entire life the next day after the day in the shelter with the thru hikers. Cause Old Black, I remember the name of that peak cause it scarred me. There was no trail to the top of that one. And I stepped on a rotten log and the log it didn't really bleed that much, but it scraped my whole like inner thigh, like from knee to groin. And I had the nastiest bruise on my leg. It looked a lot worse than it felt actually, but I will never forget that. And yes, there are a lot of those peaks that don't have trails all the way to the top.
Yeah, no, and it was confusing. Like, I mean, it was one of those things where you're like in the middle of it, you're like, oh, this is really cool. And sometimes you're like, yeah, this is kind of dumb. But like, I mean, a lot of the peaks had like, and this like also for like, we didn't have like an iPhone. Like I had like a legitimate GPS brick that told you that, you know, I'm like trying to look at the map of see what our elevation should be. Because in the Smokies too, or in the, you know, you're on top of a hill with, covered in trees and you're like, do you think this is the tallest point or is that over there the tallest point? And you're like, and not that it even matters because no one cares, but you're kind of like, well, I think we're here.
We did a lot of that, like, yeah. I guess this is the top.
Yeah,
we're so close.
But yeah, no, and a lot of it too, there is like a weird beaten path of other people have done it, or sometimes people buy like some sort of colored tape or whatever, which you're kind of like, oh, you're not supposed to do that, but I'm kind of glad you did because I don't know where I was going.
Yeah. No, I've been on some of those peaks, you know, off the Blue Ridge that are part of it. Uh-huh. Like, and now, you know, it's been a while, so I don't know if I'm going to have it right, but like, is it Brownie Knob, you know, where they have the plane crash off of it? And
it very well could be.
Yeah.
I remember the names of a lot of them.
Yeah. The hard thing is there's 40 of them. We did a lot of them together and I couldn't name them.
All blends together.
I remember one with plane wreckage though. So that exists somewhere. So.
Yes. So I do remember that. And what made me think of it is because, again, there's not really quite a trail, but there's some tape and things like that to help you along.
Yeah. You choose your own adventure. You just try your best.
What surprised me was how much hiking, and I haven't traversed like all along the Blue Ridge Parkway, but what, you know, there's a lot of like trails all through there.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't realize it. I didn't realize how close. And I know you guys brought up the Art Loeb Trail, and I do want to talk about that because part of my interest in the Art Loeb Trail was that I had been off the Blue Ridge and went to, I think it's Black Balsam.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yes, Black Balsam. Again, to watch the sunrise, mm-hmm. except I went the wrong way. And I'm like, wow, shouldn't I have gotten to the Bald by now? So I'm just off into like the other side of the road and went, you know, the wrong way.
Yeah, and on that
yes,
side,
all the trees. Figured it out, turned around, and you know, it was still awesome. I mean, even if I didn't watch it, but yeah. So the Balds themselves are gorgeous. And when I went up there and, you know, hiked around and it's windy and everything, you know, you're getting all of that. But I saw the plaque up on top that said, you know, Art Loeb. And so tell me about that area and that trail. And, you know, do you even know who's Art Loeb? Is he, he's probably somewhere in Wiki of some important.
I should know who that is, but I know.
You can edit in the me reading the Wikipedia.
I don't know.
I'm sure, knowing my personality, I'm sure it, at the time I knew who he was, but yeah. I don't remember. I'm sorry.
I don't have any idea.
Yeah.
Never knew.
But it was named after, just like, you know, there's Benton McKay. There's a lot of trails down there named after someone.
John Muir. I know who that is.
Yeah. No, but I think the thing that kind of got me excited on the Art Loeb was one, like I said, Cold Mountain's like not technically a part of it, but you're right at the base of Cold Mountain. And so that was how I first got over there, was to go hike Cold Mountain. And then we went back and hiked it again as a part of our 6,000 foot peak thing. But it was one of those things, like we were in this area, and kind of when you're living wherever you're living, sometimes you don't live on the PCT, you know, and it's like, cool if you live on the PCT, but you don't live on the PCT. And it's like, so I go walk at the beach and I go hike the Art Loeb, you know, it's like you get inspired by what's around you, and finding something that, you know, like did a through hike kind of a thing. I mean, it's only 30 miles, but like, it's still named and you can hike from one end to another. And when you're done, you can look at each other and high five and say, we did it, woohoo, you know, and go into Asheville and eat some food. But I think that was just kind of the we were looking for just something fun to get to do together, spend time together. And I already knew that the place was beautiful because we'd hiked all over it to hike all the 6,000 foot peaks. Mm-hmm. And the section, like you said, from the Blue Ridge up to Shining Rock, it's like basically one giant big, you know, blueberry bald. Mm-hmm. And so it's gorgeous. And like the weekend we did, it was cold, but it was clear. Yeah. I mean, there's just something nice about hanging out, spending time with your wife in a beautiful location, and like stopping and drinking water out of a spring. And, you know, you just kind of like, life is good. This is awesome that we have the opportunity to do this. And Art Loeb, you don't need a permit. You do need to carry a bear can to go through Shining Rock. But other than that, like there's, you know, you just show up and do it. And
I guess so that is really like cool. The one requirement that is not, that would be good to know if you wanted to hike.
Yeah. And I think the only reason they have that as a requirement is because since you're up in a bald, like there's no place to like hang your food, because there's not really.
That's tree. True. And so. It's not only bears. I'm sure it's like other critters.
Yeah. And I know.
Yeah. That there are some bears up there.
A decent amount of bear activity in that wilderness.
Especially if they're in the summer when all the berries are ripe, because they're like you. They want to eat out too. So.
See the stains all over your mouth from hands.
Like, this is my bush. You need to go away.
What would be the typical time? You said it's 30 miles. So like, can you do it in the winter? I mean, is it really right now it's, I know there's snow probably down there too. I mean, so is it more like a spring, summer, fall kind of?
I mean, it just depends like what you're comfortable, like your level of comfortability is. I know the biggest thing is they shut the Blue Ridge down in the wintertime. So, which that doesn't affect the terminus, but if like you wanted to just get to the meat of it, the good part, the Blue Ridge takes you right there. And so you would need to check the website to see when they open. And that's just weather dependent. I think I'm sure it's based on a time plan.
So if someone doesn't live around there, it might be a little tricky because, you know, it kind of could vary by day.
I think my suggestion would be to hike in spring or fall, because you don't have leaves on the trees like you do in summer. So you get better views. Mm-hmm. And I'm just I don't love hiking in the heat. So I prefer spring or fall conditions. And then again, you get better views because you can see out of the trees. Or you might get the beauty of the fall too. Fall in that area is really gorgeous.
Yeah. But I mean, if humidity and bugs are your thing, then July is fantastic.
Yeah. So. Go then.
Okay. Maybe not.
And I think you could hike in the wintertime too. But the trail is way more challenging than I had anticipated. I was surprised by how hard it was.
Yeah. So, okay. So what, where is the terminus?
Outside of Brevard is where we started, which is, I couldn't tell you exactly.
Yeah,
what
I can't. I think it's, well, so the northern end is the, I think it, oh, I can look at my map, but I think it's
got a map on the floor.
Trusty map.
Hold on just a second, I can tell you for sure. But yeah, so the Daniel Boone Boy Scout Camp is the northern terminus, which it's kind of weird when you go, because you're driving through a legitimate Boy Scout camp and you're kind of like, am I trespassing? Am I drive here? And you just drive on in, and then you park on the side of a random dirt road, and that's where you leave your car, so you know.
So that's where we finished.
Hide your valuables, I guess.
Okay, so that's where you finished.
So that's where we like hiked to, but then we hiked back.
Or I guess that's true. That was our midway point, and then we turned around and went back.
And then the trail starts, I guess it's just the Pisgah Ranger Station outside of Brevard. So it's, which the ranger station is really cool. Like they have like a little you know, taxidermy demonstration and a gift shop and, you and know, the map. And all that
if,
stuff.
If you showed up unprepared without a map, you can get one there.
Yeah.
That's where I got mine.
So, yeah, we're like, it's 30 miles. There's probably water out there. Let's do it. And she's like, we have a map for $1. I'm like, okay, we'll take one. Maybe $5, but
it was cheap.
That's worth it.
So, but yeah, no, the Arlope was great. Like I said, the main distinction, I feel like the views were fantastic, but the trail is just, it's kind of like, you know, AT style. Like there's a lot of roots and like sometimes instead of going around the side of the mountain, the trail goes straight up a bit. And then as soon as you're at the top, it's like, let's go straight down again for fun. Mm-hmm. But if you've hiked in this part of the country on the East Coast, yeah, then you're used to that. But it's just one of those where like, you feel like, why is it taking us an hour to hike a mile? Like, cause you know, that just like, that's not our, like normally we hike about, you know, a couple miles an hour or in to be like down to one. You're just like, oh, wow, this is like going to take longer than we thought. And not that that's necessarily a bad thing, but just kind of having the mental capacity of like, this is just a slower trail. Whereas the Foothills Trail, like it was nice and quick and a lot easier to move faster.
Okay. So like a continuum of like the difficulty. Yeah. Meter.
It was just a lot easier to move on the Foothills Trail, whereas the Arlope, I felt like you were doing a lot. And there was like a section I remember where I was using my hands for part of it to get over a particularly rocky section. It wasn't anything like, it was just weird rocks and it was just precarious more than it wasn't really all that. It wasn't dangerous. It just was not easy footing.
So. Did you guys use trekking poles at all?
I always do because I'm unbelievably not graceful. So I require them.
You know, I hadn't for a long time and I finally started and I was like, oh, well, this is why people use them. It's so much easier on your knees. And
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it would make that big of a difference, but it really does. It helps with your knees and your balance and with, I mean, there's no river crossings or anything like that on any of these trails, but having an extra set of legs in a creek bed is always nice too.
Mm-hmm. So you were talking about just going, you didn't carry water. Basically you knew there would be water sources.
We carried a little bit of water, but I don't remember water being a challenge. Like, I feel like we had plenty of options to refill water and just carry a little bit at a time.
Yeah.
So, and you did it as a yo-yo.
Mm-hmm.
So were you just kind of doing that because you wanted to make a longer hike or just, you know, we want to park here and just come, you know, come back to it?
Both of those.
A little of both. Yeah. Honestly, probably not having to figure out a shuttle was probably one of the main motivators. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, it was one. And I thought like 60 miles. Cool. We should be able to do it in this amount of time. And then I was like, oh crap, this is taking longer than I thought it was going to. So, I mean, we were still able to easily do it over like a 4-day weekend, but,
it was exhausting though.
Yeah. I mean, like it was like, our 1-day weekend of hiking like 13 hours or something like that, which I was like, I was not anticipating it to take us this long to get here. And I don't even remember how far we went, but it's just one of those where you're looking at the clock and like, what is happening right now? But it's like a trail vortex, I guess. But yeah, I would say that, the convenience of getting back to your own car and you get to rewalk over a really beautiful spot too is really nice.
Yeah.
Are you guys early risers for hiking?
Yes and no. I mean,
I feel like I see so many other people on trail who are like, I'm up and hiking by 6 a.m. I'm like, that's not me. I mean, I feel like I'm able to wake up and I can set an alarm and get up, but I don't just wake up and I'm ready to hike.
Yeah.
But I am like, I am a morning person.
Yeah.
Once I'm awake.
So. Well, I feel like when we're on like a trip and we're like, when we're on like a through hike and we're trying to actually like make miles and stuff, we usually will set our alarm to where like we wake up right about sunrise, like right when it's starting to get light, that way we're not getting ready in the dark, but by the time we get everything going, because it probably takes us like 45 minutes to like wake up, eat something, pack everything up, and you know, get ready to hit the trail. But yeah, I feel like we usually do that. I mean, every once in a while obviously you'll sleep in or do whatever, but
yeah,
we're usually pretty like task oriented when we're on trail.
It feels more of a discipline though. And maybe it is this way for other people. It feels more of a discipline for me at least than I feel like these people who are just like, I don't set an alarm and I'm just up and I'm going. I don't know that I fall into that category.
Yeah. Do you guys like kind of split up the camp chores and everything, kind of have your own rhythm?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, because we're like, you know, like trying to prepare for this, I guess. So I was like, well, what are some things? But yeah, no, that's something that like has happened that like, I don't know. I feel like it's kind of the same way in our house. Like, I wouldn't be able to say like, this is the moment we had a talk and now I wash the dishes and you cook the food. But like, that's just how our relationship works. And it's the same way of camping. It's like, I like don't set up the stakes on the tent because like, that's Liesl's job. And like in the morning, I take the tent down and put it away. And like, I carry certain things and she carries certain things. And that's a great thing about having a hiking partner is then you can have duplication or not need duplicate items. But yeah, no, very much so. And I like couldn't even necessarily articulate all of them, but like we went camping with my brother this past summer for the first time. And it was really weird to like identify that like, oh, you have to do that. And I have Liesl to do that. or like,
vice versa.
Yeah, yeah. Or like, oh, that sucks. You have to carry all that stuff. Or I don't know, but just like, oh, that's weird. I don't realize that like, oh, that's a part of our relationship.
Or even how, like when we went camping with his brother, there are parts where like, I don't even realize, like we just have such a rhythm down that like I set out the footprint and I like get the tent set up to a certain point and then he comes and helps me with stakes or now I guess trekking poles because we have a non-freestanding tent, but we do parts of it together where when I see somebody doing it by themselves I'm like, oh, that looks like a pain. Do that part by yourself.
When we can do so many things without talking too.
Yeah, we don't talk very often,
hundreds of times, and so it's like we're just sitting there just like doing our thing. Mm-hmm. It's kind of just funny the like things that become normative of being in a like a thru hiking relationship, which is a weird thing that not very many people have, but we definitely do.
Well, I mean, just by the sound of it, you have to have great communication to, and even if it's like nonverbal, and it comes to be that, where you're just in sync, so all of the things that are great about what you can have in a, I guess, non-through hiking relationship probably work in the through hiking relationship too. Cause if you're together, for 5 months,
yeah,
day in and day out, you're going to have to make it, it's going to better work.
Yeah. Well, that's like one of the things, like I was thinking about like just our relationship and I don't know, like there's gotta be a reason why I like to hike mountains so much and like to hike trails so much. And I just think a lot of it is just personality based. I mean, a lot of thru hikers I meet, like they think the same way I do, or they're motivated in a similar way. And so sure, a lot of that is just pertaining to that. But like our relationship, like we started by like walking and talking. Like we went to school in Chicago and like before I was even thinking of dating Liesl, I was just like, oh, you're cool. Let's just go like on a walk. Like, so I love to go walking and the city at night is super. I mean, if you get over the scary fact, like I'm walking in Chicago at night, I'm going to get in trouble. But like, it's like we'd go on a walk through Lincoln Park or like walk up the waterfront and it was just pretty. And I just enjoyed doing it. And like, you got to the point where it's like, when you're walking with somebody, you just talk about stuff and it like naturally kind of moves inward to where you talk about your life, you talk about yourself. And there's just a lot of opportunity for self-reflection and for just personal growth in like what a thru hike provides you the chance to do. And I think that's been a real pivotal thing for our relationship because you do see like your partner's like ugly side along with your ugly side. But at the same time, like we have a relationship where we know that we have each other's best interests in heart. And so like, there's times when I'm like, oh, maybe I should eat something because I'm being terrible. Or maybe we should take a break because we're exhausted. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like, some of my best memories are like hiking and watching the sunset in the desert on the PCT in California and just like listening to music and just like being so happy and talking about how great our life is and like the direction we're going together. And like, I don't know, like that's what we do now. It's like, we went on the beach today and walked on Isle of Palm and it's just like, we're like, dude, life is so good. We're on the beach right now. We're about to go to the Arizona Trail. Like, oh, I'm so stoked. I'm excited about where our life is going. Like, can you believe we're pulling this off? Like we work part-time. This is so rad, and it's like, and that's like where I want my life to be and really thankful. And I know that that's something our life is unique and it's been a lot of work, but it's been a gift. And I know that Liesl and my relationship in the same way is unique and it's a gift, but it's also been a lot of work.
So that's a good question. Cause I'm sure people want to know, like, how do you, how is it that you can pull it off for, the whole like money factor of, you know, are you kind of working assignments and then you get that time off so you can go back and then, you know, work again, save up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, like when we came to Charleston with the idea of basically all our traveling up to kind of through hiking was, oh, cool. Like I was in graduate school and I was working for Residential Life. And so like when I graduated, we didn't have a house and I got an internship in Florida that didn't start until October and it was May. And so I was like, oh, like, what if we just lived in our car and hiked 14ers and then went and hiked the John Muir Trail and then we moved to Florida. And so that's what we did. And at the time I was like, this will be the adventure of our life. And like, you know, lo and behold, we've moved in between jobs. But here in Charleston, one of the reasons we've come back is we have family here, which is a great resource, honestly. Like my parents have a garage I can leave our stuff in, which is a big deal. And like, I know that in worst case scenario, they have a spare guest bedroom that we could stay in if we got into trouble. But as far as jobs go, I'm a landscape gardener. So Charleston has a really cool historic district downtown. So I just working landscaping. I mean, like, I think one of the things is like, there's glamour to that. I can say, oh, I work in $1 million gardens and maintain like these rose gardens that people go on tour to see, blah, blah, blah. But in the same time, like I sweep up sand that horses pee in. And like, I literally am a street sweeper as a part of my career. And so I think that that's part of the reality. And one thing with like working landscaping is it's a job that's hard and, you know, a lot of people don't want to do it. But my bosses are great people. They're the same thing with Lisa. Like our bosses have bought into like what we're doing and like we try to be great employees and do a good job for them. And in the same way, they want to be supportive of what we're doing. And they've said like, yeah, you can like go hike the PCT. And if you want to come back, you can come back. And that's what we did. And we're like, we're only going to be here for 5 months. Is that okay? Cause we're going to hike CDT. And then they're like, oh, coronavirus, we can stay for a year. Is that okay? And they're like, yeah, that's great. Whatever, whatever. And like, you know, and it's like my bosses have made it known to me that like, if you want to come and go, like we would love that. We want you to be around. And so I know that that's like something that might not be able for everybody, but that's been something that we've been able to make happen.
Well, what I'm hearing though, is it's just kind of like in your relationship, just like open communication, right? You know,
I think like we've been open to people that we work for as much as we can be at the time and just letting them see what's important and valuable to us and saying like, here's where we are, you know, you feel free and comfortable to do whatever works best for you, but we're available if you want us. And I think the other thing too, is how we make it work our lifestyle choices. Like we have one car because we've chosen to live where I can walk to work or he can drop me off. And so we have one car, he uses a flip phone. And so we have my iPhone that we take everywhere. And whenever he goes to work, he takes like a pay-as-you-go track phone so we can cut down on expenses. We have a beautiful inflatable couch instead of a regular couch because it was supposed to be temporary that we lived here. But you know, we live in like a studio, but it works great for us. You know, like we find ways to cut down on our expenses and be really frugal and pointed about how we spend our money so we're able to save. And along with, because I just don't want it to sound like that we have this, we do have a wonderful support system, but we've also been really pointed in particular about how we spend our money. But I don't want to say we've done all this work and that's the reason why we've been able to do it without saying that we have a like whole host of people who support us and have helped make it possible as well. Yeah. So they're incredibly valuable to us.
Yeah. But it's like Liesl said, like, I mean, through hiking, other than like maintaining, you know, a great relationship with my wife, it's like through hiking's been like the thing. It's like, you know, we go out to eat once, you know, like every once in a while, but it's like, I don't know. It's like kind of a game of like, okay, like what if we did that at home? Or like what, you know, my hobby is I go like find public land and sleep there for free. So it's like, you know, it's like, and so I think that like making decisions and prioritizing that, I mean, that's really it. I mean, there's not like a, you know, I feel like it would be easy if you're like, oh, this is the career, this is the way you make it work. But for us, it's just been, well, we would love to do this. Like, what do we need to do to make that happen? Mm-hmm. And I think that like, sometimes it's been glamorous and cool. And sometimes it's not glamorous and cool. Like I like was planning on working as, you know, as a gardener this year for 5 months and then COVID happened. And so working as a landscaper in Charleston this summer is terrible. It's very hot. It's like oh, it's bad. And like, I was like looking down the barrel of a summer here, like when one, you're going to find out, oh, you don't get to go hike because of COVID. And then two, that I have to like work like this, like job that's like physically just like draining. I was like,
and the oh, heat and the bugs and
oh the, yeah. yeah. Well, the heat, the bugs, like having to like, you know, I was like, I'm managing other coworkers and like things that like I can do, but it's not like my natural skill set is to like want to do. And so it's just, but it's, you know, just deciding like, I want the CDT bad enough. So I'm going to do this. Like, it's going to be okay. And like, it has been okay. You know, there's been, like I said, it's great to live at the beach, but at times you just have to do what, you know, needs to be done to make it happen.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good way to put it. And as I was listening, I think if you haven't been through, you know, if you haven't been doing it or, you know, as you guys have been, you know, through hiking, you know, a few trails now, someone who is thinking about it just really has to take the effort to understand what it takes. It's not just, you know, okay, I'm going to, you know, I have 4 months off between, you know, college and grad school. I'm just going to go hike. But I think you, I mean, maybe you could have thought that a few years ago, but I think ultimately you've learned mm-hmm. from all of those experiences and realize, oh, there's sacrifice involved.
Yeah.
Oh, there's, you know, planning, there's choices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and that was the thing I told Lisa, like when we decided we wanted to hike the PCT, we made the decision to, we got a lease in Charleston for 13 months. And so we're like, okay, we're going to live in Charleston for 13 months. And the timeline will set us up to start hiking the PCT in May of 2019. Mm-hmm. And I just remember like I worked as a landscaper that summer. That was my first summer in Charleston. And after that summer, I was like, I'm never doing that again. And lo and behold, I did it again. But I just remember like I told Lisa, I said like, you know, cause you're always like, when I finish our through hike, I'll probably cry cause I'll be so happy. I told her, I said, when we get to the Southern terminus of the PCT, I'm going to cry. And when anybody asks me like, how you make it happen, be like, I worked really hard at a terrible job for a really long time, guys. That's how I made it happen. I mean, my job was great, but like, there's just moments where you're like, yeah, like when we got to the Southern terminus, I was like, we did some work just to get to where we get the chance to do it. And it's like, mm-hmm. I think that that's something that I'm in kind of in the same place now. It's like, I'm getting excited to go back on trail. And it's like, yeah, like, I had to put in the time to get this opportunity. And I think that makes you be present when you're on the trail, just to know like what a gift that it is, because there's so many people that I've met that like, you know, you hike the trail and you love doing it and you want to keep doing it. And when you're on the trail, you love the experiences you have. I love the person that I am when I'm on trail, and just getting to celebrate the chance to get to do that again is a really exciting and, I mean, honestly, kind of an addicting thing. That's why I keep wanting to do it all the time. So,
you know, how far out, I guess, have you guys been thinking? You know, I know CDT is definitely like on the wish list, the near wish list. But I mean, have you guys thought like beyond that, like the GDT or, you know, like, is there any like, you know, those couple of things?
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the GDT would be cool. I mean, I feel like,
I'm walking.
Yeah. I mean, thankfully, honestly, like, through hiking to me has been great for a lot of reasons, but I think that one of the reasons I love through hiking is because I feel like I love experiences, and I love the opportunity to be curious about different things. Like, I love plants, I love different places. Like, whenever we go somewhere, I try to read a book about the area, or I try to look into what I need to like try to see while we're there that's unique about it. And I think that through hiking is expanded that a ton, because you go through so many different ecosystems and towns and states and all that. But I think the thing that's exciting for me is after the Triple Crown is to not necessarily like, I don't think like I could see us rehike a trail, but I don't foresee us being the people that are like, let's start on the AT again, or let's start the PCT again. I'm kind of like, oh God.
You don't want to do the triple crown?
Yeah. It's like people who do that, I'm like, that's great. But like, I legitimately have a knee that I'm like, please God, let it get to Canada one more time. But I think the thing that I'm most excited about is, I mean, my background is I have my master's in international agriculture. Like, we've worked in development work and nonprofit work in the past. And like, I love the idea of just being able to travel internationally. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think there's a lot of people that are just excited to go, just with all the things that have happened with coronavirus, especially. And I think, I mean, for me, like, I'm really into Chinese tea. Like, that's another obsessive thing. Like, you know, know, like I really like Pu'er tea, and I would love to go to Yunnan and go to all the different regions and like be a part of the tea process, and like that's another dream of mine. And I mean, I don't know, like,
so do you bring the tea on trail then?
No,
tea,
it's the whole thing.
Yeah, like okay. Tea ceremonies, like a lot of like it's kind of like a little girl's tea party. You got like, you know, this thing and this thing and this and like we wake up. I mean, talking about like morning, like we, I mean, I don't know, I'm rambling, but we're pretty consistent routine people. We wake up and drink tea every morning.
It's like an hour long.
Yeah, day. It's like an hour long. It's instead of so Western tea, like so like British tea is a big teapot. And so you use a little bit of leaves, a lot of water for a lot of time. Chinese tea, you have a little teapot or a gaiwan, like a little cup with a lid on it, and you use a lot of tea and a little bit of water for a little bit of time. So instead of drinking a cup of tea like you know would normally do, you drink 8 to 10 little tiny cups of like tea. So it's,
and the flavor kind of
changes. Yeah, so there's an arc to it. So there's like,
yeah,
and it's kind of radical, but there's like,
yeah,
regions have like the tea tastes differently because you have different growing conditions, and so you'll have some areas are famous and expensive and others aren't, and it's again another one of my things. Yeah. But it's cool.
Like to add on to what you were saying about like I don't think we'll ever be done adventuring. I think there could come a day where we might be done pursuing through hikes every year. I think I'll always be a hiker and a backpacker. Mm-hmm. But big goal is the Triple Crown, but I don't think we'll ever be done adventuring and seeing new places and having new experiences, whether that's going to China and visiting the Yunnan, or, you know, going to who knows where. That sounds going. We want to go see the Tour de France.
Yeah, I want to go. I love the tour. I want to follow the tour. I want to go to Borneo and look for Nepenthes pitcher plants. I mean, there's a lot of great stuff out there.
There's a lot of planet, a lot of Earth out there that's really neat.
And it may not always be preceded by, you know, before we have kids, right?
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. I can't go on record about it.
Okay, all right. So as we kind of close out, I want to know what are you excited about for the Arizona Trail then? Because, you know, you're saying how you kind of get excited about, you know, different trails and how you plan for it. So what are you looking forward to?
Yeah. Do you want to go first?
Sure. I think if I steal yours, I'm sorry.
Okay.
But we really enjoyed more than I had expected hiking the desert in California on the PCT. And I'm just excited to be back in the desert. I mean, Charleston's humid, much more tropical. And I really like the landscape of the desert. Like, I think like the desert in Utah is really cool. The desert in California is really cool. I would assume maybe I'll find out someday that the desert in New Mexico is really cool. We'll cross our fingers. But I'm just excited to be in like a desert landscape again. Like, I kind of like the harsh environment where things are dry, but, you know, you get really excited and focused on water. Like the things that you take for granted in other landscapes, you kind of have to focus on in the desert. You know, you have to plan around water sources or plan around shade or plan around things like that. So I'm really excited for like the challenge, but also just to be in an arid desert landscape.
And what about you, Dave?
I mean, I'm excited to hike through the Grand Canyon again. Yeah. I'm excited to see saguaros. I'm excited to find plants and animals that I don't even know anything about. And I'm just like, look at that, take a picture and get in town and find out what it is online. But I think the thing for me, like, I feel like our through hiking journey has been just as much about me learning about myself and personal growth as anything else. I think that being in an environment where you only have one shirt to walk in and one shirt to sleep in, and what, you know, like so many of the things that I spend my time thinking about fall away because they're not there and you're unaware of them. And I love just being, I don't know, away from the news, away from my job, away from all these things, and out in a, you know, 5-star outdoor arena with my wife, my best friend, for, you know, 800 miles, a month and a half, or however long it's going to take. And it's like, to me, that's what gets me the most excited, is knowing that like, I'm going to meet really cool people that I don't know right now. I'm going to go into a town that I've, you know, maybe looked at on a map, but I don't, you know, like looking like the map you talked about, like in our apartment, like when I first looked at the map of the PCT or the AT or whatever, it's like, the random town didn't mean anything. And now it's like, I look back and I'm like, oh, that's where we met these people. And we got to stay in their house. And like, we send them Christmas cards still. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just like weird stuff like that, that you can't really articulate mm-hmm. beforehand. But having done this, like, you know, half dozen times or whatever, you just know that those things are going to happen. Yeah. And like, that's like that the adventure of it, yeah. I guess, is what just like so yeah. pumped.
Now there's memories with all of those town names rather than yeah. just seeing a spot on the map.
Yeah, totally. So
I like that. I like that, you know, the excitement for putting something kind of towards that town, that moment, that experience, that it's not necessarily right now you can articulate it, but you'll have those yeah. moments afterward.
For sure.
Yeah. So I really do hope you get to do the Arizona Trail and the CDT this year, or parts of it.
We hope so too. We appreciate it.
Yeah. All and right. if not, someday. Yeah. It's not going anywhere. Yes. Yeah.
No, it isn't. Well, I thank you both. This has been a great conversation. And Dave, it's so nice to finally talk to you. And
oh, this
yeah.
guy.
Yeah. thanks for having me on your show.
I wasn't sure I'd be able to convince him. I was like, because he's a quiet guy.
Well,
a quiet, well, you're quieter and you
yeah, normally. I mean, I like talking to like one person. Like yeah. if it's like 12 out. People and somebody else wants to talk, I'm like, great, you can handle this one. I'm gonna go sit over here.
But I mentioned it to him and he was like, yeah, sure, that'd be great. I was like, oh, this will be so fun. You have lots to say that people will enjoy.
Yes. Yeah. I think it's been great and I look forward to putting it out. Thank you again for listening today. Check the show notes for ways to connect with myself and guests and to find out how you can become a patron and support the show. So until next time, see you on the trail.